on paper, much of this music looks easier than perhaps many other pieces that we would play, but it has two things going against it for classical musicians. One of which is, of course, that it hasn't been recorded 400 times and worked its way into the canon, so everybody hasn't heard it over and over, and they're not just sort of playing it by ear. The paradox is, it's a piece that would be best played by ear, in a sense, because it involves grooves and dance rhythms and just kind of getting into it and mixing it up. And it's an interesting thing. I was thinking on the way here to talk with you this morning about how somehow the whole of the classical system has actually made it more difficult on some level for classical musicians to just groove in a kind of simple way, you know? There's some grooves in Ricardo's piece. I was thinking about this one passage where they have this boo ba boo be doo ba bo da do re do ba ba. Now, if you just sang that to the orchestra and had them play it back to you, they could play it fine. But when they look at it, it's this endless collection of strange 16th notes and ties and things that trip them up and make them play in a fashion that's really not quite, you know, what's intended. This happens all the time when you have classical musicians in an orchestra, for example, trying to play some jazz-influenced music. I've done the West Side Story Symphonic Dances a few times, and every time it's an amazing struggle to get people to play what I think is really a very simple kind of thing. But you have to be a little liberated from the page. You have to sort of get it, process it, and then rock out on it, you know? And it can't be a staring at it thing. And so in many ways, I think that's what's really hard. It's just the style. The licks, you know what I mean by licks, the sort of technique of any given passage is really not that difficult. But the style of it is very elusive if you haven't played this kind of music before.
Getting phantasmagorical here, the Symphonie Fantastique by Berlioz, a large piece, a scary piece in some ways. Certainly, my understanding, one of the very first that we know for sure was written with the aid of some external
influence,
imbibed or otherwise. Talk about what it's like to do this piece.
You know, it's hair-raising music, and I think, like all great masterpieces, the thing that is so humbling about it is that it can never be played up to its potential, you know? No matter what level the thing is being executed at, somehow it always seems more magical and the possibilities are even greater than what you could possibly achieve with anybody. You know what I mean? I think that's the way we feel about all the great pieces. I mean, can you imagine a Hamlet being performed better than it is? It's not possible, you know, at a certain level. I think that's true of this piece as well, because every moment has become, it's almost become a caricature of itself in many ways, you know, famous for very good reasons. And this is actually the first time I've done it. I have to say that as progressive a work as I knew that it was, when you look at it on the page, you can see that it's still 1830. It's very easy to put your mind in a different spot when you're listening to Fantastique and pretend it's from 1910 or something. In 1830, with the means at the man's disposal at the time, with the things that had ever been done, for him to have done this it's beyond inexplicable to me. Little things that most people wouldn't recognize as new are so groundbreaking that they shape the whole destiny of music, not the least of which is the idea of course, writing a big piece like this based on an opium trip in which your murdered lover comes back to haunt you over your grave. I mean, this is crazy, you know. It's 3 years after the death of Beethoven, and I have no explanation for this.